Look, you can't win the race if you don't finish the race. It's time to embrace the mentality of an overcomer.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
You know, look, friends, no one said there wouldn't be opposition. No one said there wouldn't be difficulty. No one said there wouldn't be challenges. No one said there wouldn't be obstacles. But in Jesus, you and I are overcomers. In Jesus, you and I are more than conquerors. I want to encourage you to stand strong. I want to encourage you to stand tall. I want to encourage you to endure, to persevere. To repeat, you can't win the race if you don't finish the race. This is Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Delighted to be with you today. I want to encourage you. I want to help strengthen you through the Word, through biblical principles. Sometimes the going does get rough. Sometimes we do want to quit. We do want to cave in. Sometimes we want to keep going, but it seems there's no strength to it. It seems we've hit a wall, we've hit our limit, and yet there is grace to endure. Proverbs 24:10, if you faint in the day of trouble, your strength is small. You might say, that's me. Ah, the other side is be strong in the Lord and in the power of his might. Tell you what I want to do today. I'm going to be looking at some scriptural principles, some scriptural truths to help encourage you, strengthen you for the long haul. I'm also going to look at some news, some things that are taking place today in the society and around the world. I'm going to get to some e-questions, hopefully, but I want to open the phone lines to any question you'd like to ask me, whether it has to do with moral and cultural issues, whether it has to do with biblical interpretation, whether it has to do with just something you've been wondering about, like we do on Friday. I want to give you opportunity to call in. So we'll do a little. You've got questions. We've got answers as well. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. In other words, it can be totally off topic. We'll take your calls as well today. 866-34-TRUTH. Listen to what the scriptures say in Hebrews chapter 12. Hebrews chapter 12. Therefore, you know the principle of interpretation with therefore, right? When you see the therefore, you ask what it's there for. So the writer to the Hebrews, to these Jewish believers, we don't know who it was, many different traditions arguing for different authors, but we don't know who wrote it for sure. When I say for sure, we don't know who wrote it. We don't know who wrote it for sure. But the writer to Hebrews is looking back to the believers in the past, to Abraham and Enoch and Noah, other believers, people, men and women who stood by faith against all odds. Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, we must get rid of every weight and the sin that clings so easily and run with endurance the race set out for us, keeping our eyes fixed on Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of our faith. For the joy set out for him, he endured the cross, disregarding its shame, and has taken his seat at the right hand of the throne of God. Think of him who endured such opposition against himself by sinners, so that you may not grow weary in your souls and give up. You have not yet resisted to the point of bloodshed in your struggle against sin. An interesting word of encouragement. Would you not agree? We'll look at this some more. I want to encourage you to endure. And the phone lines are open with your questions. 866-34-TRUTH.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to The Line of Fire broadcast, 866-34-TRUTH. Even though it's Tuesday, you've got questions, we've got answers. Any moral, cultural questions you'd like to ask, biblical, theological questions, personal, spiritual growth questions, Israel-related, we'll take some extra calls today if we can. 866-348-7884. The more I see details of the Iran nuclear arms deal, the worse it seems, the worse it looks, the more perplexing it is that President Obama and Secretary of State Kerry have pushed so hard to see this happen. It seems utterly bizarre. I believe Israel and other Arab nations have every right in condemning this deal. A $150 billion reward for Iran that was on the ropes because of severe economic sanctions because of their nuclear program, inability to test things properly so that they could get away with all types of subterfuge, and the long-term goal of getting nuclear arms absolutely unhindered, why in the world would we and other nations sign up on this? There's a graphic, a cartoon that we posted on our Facebook page, and it shows Iran, an Ayatollah-looking figure, holding on. Here it is. I just grabbed it right here. Iran before the nuclear deal, and there's Ayatollah, apparently Khamenei, chanting death to America. Iran before the nuclear deal. And after, the exact same picture, he's chanting death to America. Instead, the only difference is he's holding under one arm a nuclear bomb and raising in the other hand a bundle of U.S. cash. By the way, that one graphic just on our Facebook page was shared more than 20,000 times. People were drawn to it, I think, reached 1.5 million or more people. In other words, this is really speaking the truth. This is really getting a message across. Can anyone out there defend this? Can anyone out there enlighten us and tell me and others, including experts who've looked at this in detail, what we are all missing? Oh, no, I'm not an expert on the details of a nuclear arms treaty, but I look to those who are experts, one after another, after another, after another, panning this, saying, what in the world were we thinking? Also, a third video has now been released from the Center for Medical Research detailing clear profit-making on baby parts, so-called fetal tissue, aborted babies' hearts, liver, brain, other tissue, other body parts, for profit by Planned Parenthood, by those that then get the organs and baby parts for medical research, clearly for profit, according to this latest video. Check it out. We link that on our Facebook page as well. If you're not connected with us via Facebook, it is Ask Dr. Brown, A-S-K-D-R Brown on Facebook. Okay, back to the question of perseverance and endurance. How do you persevere? How do you make it for the long haul? How do you stand in there when there's a lot of resistance? Look, it's easy when things are easy. It's easy when everything's going well. It's easy when there are no obstacles in front of you. The reason many people don't make it to the finish line of their particular calling or the finish line of their particular goal is because there are obstacles. It's because there are battles. You know, it's like somebody hitting the heavy bag in the gym. Man, you're landing these powerful punches. You're working out as a boxer. Not worked much with a heavy bag over the years in exercising, but while in Italy, a place where I was staying, a fellow brought me downstairs to the basement of his office in a building, and he said, hey, I've got this heavy bag here, and and put on some gloves and started to hit it and realized, whoa, I need a little bit more padding on my hands or I'm going to hurt my hands. But, man, you could be a whiz shadow boxing and hitting the heavy bag and hitting the speed bag and all of that. It's another thing when you're now in the boxing ring and someone's trying to hit you back. Someone's trying to knock you out. Someone's also been hitting the heavy bag and the speed bag and been sparring. And they're faster than you are, and they're tougher than you are, and they hit harder than you are. And suddenly, you got a little opposition. Easy when nobody's fighting you. Listen, many of us see all types of growth and prosperity and success for a season with very little opposition. And that's wonderful, and we enjoy it. Trust me, I love riding the waves of supernatural blessing when it seems like all is well and there's not a trouble in the world and you are just flying high. But I know it's temporary. I know that we're also going to be serving God in the valley as well as on the mountaintop. And what you need to do is take advantage of the mountaintop to get ready for the valley. And by the way, if you have a supernatural testimony of breakthrough, obviously we can't listen to testimonies that take hours to unfold. But if you can condense when all seemed lost, when the doctors had written you off, when society had written you off, when it seemed like you had one too many strikes against you and God came through, maybe we could hear from you as well today, 866-348-7884. So first thing you need to do, if you're going to endure, if you're going to overcome, if you're going to succeed in what God's called you to do, if you're going to stand before God one day and get that well done, good and faithful servant commendation, you've got to set your sights on the goal. You've got to set your sights on the finish line. Look, if your goal is to arrive at a certain destination and it starts getting tough along the way, you don't look at that momentary obstacle. You don't look at that momentary struggle. You don't look at the difficulty of the hour and say to yourself, well, I guess I just got to turn back. No, because you're going somewhere and you need to make a determination. I don't quit before the finish line. Now, you may need God's supernatural grace to do it. You may die 1,000 deaths on the way and think there's no way, there's no way, there's no way, there's no way. But God's grace is sufficient. You must set your sights on the goal. I know years back when I was fasting for certain lengths of time on a more regular basis, by God's grace, in many ways, I lead a fasted life now with daily disciplines of food and other things. But when I was doing longer fasts more often, I would you always had to say why you're doing it. You always had to determine in advance why you were doing it. Because for me, fasting was normally not easy. It certainly wasn't fun. Sometimes it was pretty easy, relatively speaking. You do a 5-day water fast and keep up an active schedule through it. Don't miss a beat. And you're just carried. But normally, I'd get really hungry. Because the stuff I was eating before, I didn't drink coffee, but I had chocolate addictions and I'm sure other food addictions of unhealthy food that I ate. So, headaches and just feeling really uncomfortable and stuff like that. So during the fast, and there were times, yeah, for sure, when I broke my fast. Yes, I confess to that. There were times when I broke them prematurely. But the fact is, when you set your sight on the goal, I'm fasting because I sense the need to break through in this area. I'm fasting because without a breakthrough, we're not gonna make it. I'm fasting because I've exhausted every other resource, everything I know how to do, and I need to move into another gear of desperation. And then when you set your sights on that, one doctor. Teaches a lot on nutrition, writes a lot on nutrition, made the comment, Dr. Joel Fuhrman, that knowledge trumps willpower. And the principle there is if you know a particular thing, in other words, if you know that a particular thing you're doing is going to kill you, even if it's really difficult, even if you feel no strength, even if there seems to be no way that you can make it because you know that you have to, you will. Set your sight on the goal. Set your sight on the finish line. Don't wimp out right now because of a momentary struggle. Don't wimp out right now because it seems you're in over your head. We're always in over our head. But with God, we are more than conquerors. I want to encourage you today to endure. 866-34-TRUTH. We'll be right back.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us on the Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. I just looked down on my Facebook screen. Dr. Brown, shame on you for misinforming your sheep. And those of you that follow this stuff, do your own research, be educated, look for non-biased information. You're also easily influenced. Yep, we always get the accusations. Sometimes I'll actually reach out. Sometimes I'll reach out and say, hey, could you just give me an example of misinformation? And generally never hear from them again. In fact, I'll ask that. Rather than just delete the post, I'll ask that. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Woodbridge, Virginia. Greg, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hey, Dr. Brown. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I have a question, and I'm trying to frame it the right way. I hear a lot of pastors who preach, and we stand for Israel, and I support that. But I never hear them talk about the things that the people in Israel are doing contrary to the Word of God and to Jesus Christ. And my question is, are we failing the people of Israel by not pointing out those things and holding them accountable as well, as we do people here in America?
Yeah, Greg, it's an important question. I wrote an article a few weeks ago called Biblical Zionism versus Sentimental Zionism. And by biblical Zionism, I meant that we stand with Israel because of clear biblical mandates to stand with Israel, as well as believing it's in the best interest of justice to do so. But that if we're not aware of Israel's many flaws, if we're not aware of the worldliness of worldly Israel, if we're not aware of the radical opposition to the gospel of the ultra-Orthodox Jews, if we're not aware of Israel's failings at times and its dealing with the Palestinians, then when we discover these things, we will suddenly turn against Israel, think, oh, well, you know, they're like everybody else. Why are we standing with them? So on the one hand, we often fail to do that. There's a bit of a reason for it, though, Greg, which is because of worldwide anti-Semitism and demonizing of the Jewish people, and because of the church's terrible history of dealing with the Jewish people, often persecuting them in Jesus' name. Because of that, many times we go to the other extreme. In other words, we've demonized Jews in the past. We've demonized Israel in the past. We haven't stood with the Jewish people in time of great need. Now, we're going to start pointing out their faults. So, you know, when you're repenting of mistreating someone, you sometimes go to the other extreme. The right thing to do is this, Greg. The right thing is to clearly say why we stand with Israel, why we're going to stand with Israel, whether Israel's faithful to God or not, why our commitment to the Jewish people runs deeper than their performance. And even in a state of rejecting Jesus, we're still standing with him and believing God for his promises and standing with him for the sake of justice as well. But as a true friend, not being afraid to point out faults. As a true friend, saying, hey, you need to step higher here. Now, here's the one other thing, Greg. Israel is constantly demonized by the media to this day. Israel is constantly demonized as if it's the guilty party and the Palestinians are saints. So we need to constantly combat the misinformation against Israel. And doing that, so we combat the lies against Israel, we show a true solidarity with the Jewish people. And then as true friends, we say, hey, you need to step higher here. Or, hey, we want to challenge you on this policy here. That's the balanced way to do it. But for someone preaching from America to be preaching from their pulpit about the sins of Israel doesn't make a lot of sense. We've done that for 2,000 years. Better to call for mercy towards them, recognize their fallen nature like everyone else, and then pray for their salvation.
Okay, I appreciate that. And I completely agree. It's just, you know, I'm one that I think we need to balance speaking the truth and love and, you know, holding one another accountable. And so I just wanted to ask that question because, as you said, I don't want the picture of Israel to be painted as, oh, they're perfect, and then someone say, oh, no, they're not. There's a flaw here.
You're absolutely right. Look, I tell folks that go on tour groups to Israel, and I love them doing it. We helped lead one last year for the first time, but I've dear friends that take people over all the time. We want them to be impressed when they go. We want them to see the history of Israel. We want them to see Israel's desire to live at peace with neighbors. We want them to see the good qualities of Israel. But I tell them, you better get a burden for the lost sheep of the house of Israel as well. You know, when you're praying there at the wailing wall, And you're praying and you leave saying, oh, I had such a wonderful time in Israel. Well, did you also leave with a burden? Praying for people who don't know the Lord yet, praying for people who are not saved. Look, you know, Tel Aviv overwhelmingly voted the world's most gay-friendly city a couple years back. You know, Israeli soldiers, female soldiers in the army, basically getting free abortions. Israel still having issues with crime. Israel having issues with drug use and, you know, teen rebellion and all this stuff. And then the very, very religious Jews with all their devotion. There's sometimes hypocrisy there. And, of course, militant resistance to the gospel of Jesus. But look, if our standing with Israel is superficial and just based on a sentimental attachment to the good qualities and the beauty of the land and the amazing history, then when tests come again, When the Jewish people get blamed for another world crisis and get scapegoated again, we're not going to be standing strong. So actually, your call ties in with the point I was making about persevering. You know, my wife and I, Nancy and I, going on 40 years of marriage, we love each other dearly. We are absolutely best friends. And for the most part, it's been easy being married to each other. We haven't had struggles, but there have been some challenges. Every married couple is going to have a challenge. There have been some challenges, and that's where the depth of your love and the depth of your commitment is going to persevere through a struggle. You know, you may have a happily married couple, and then they lose a child through a tragedy, and now terrible times come, emotional trauma, difficulty, even though they're faithful and loyal to each other. You can have struggles for many different reasons. It's going to be the same with Israel. There are going to be struggles, and we have to say, hey, we're in this for the long haul. Thank you for the question, an important, honest question for sure. 866-34-TRUTH. Listen, I'm going to keep taking calls, so you can get on the line now. I'm going to get to more calls on the other side of the break. 866-348-7884. Any part of the broadcast you miss, just go to my website later today, askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org, and you can listen to the entire show archived. I'm going to be giving you more principles of encouragement, principles to help overcome. Also, we've got a really unique special resource offer where you can download 24 hours of teaching that I did years back when I really got into this subject in depth in Scripture. Spiritual warfare, angels, demons, and deliverance. What does the Bible really say? How does this affect the way we live? You can download it very, very inexpensively and just have these to keep online for your MP3 player computer. Go to the website, Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org for more info.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Yeah, just looking at some recent comments. Dr. Brown is not a real doctor. He's a liar, a cheat, and a charlatan who only spreads his ignorance and idiocy online and scamming people from their hard-earned money. Oh, yeah, the man is a sociopath and a jerk. You homophobic, transphobic, ignorant blanks are the scum of the earth. Blank you and your idiocy. You're the reason the world is so blanked up. That was a sweet one. A doctorate in religious studies is about as useful to the world as milk from a bull. I decided to reply to that one for fun. Ah, but your post is off target too, kind of like your milk analogy. That's not what my doctorate is in. But thanks for the very kind and considerate words. And then let's see. Doctor of what? Got his degree from a diploma mill. So I posted, thanks for the laugh. I didn't know NYU was a diploma mill giving out fake PhDs. I'll be sure to let them know. Have a great night. Yeah, we get this all the time. Dr. Brown, it's so sad to hear a learned man that can be so hateful. Ah, well, at least that one called me a learned man. That was a sweet one. Yeah, we get this all the time. And every so often for fun, we do reach out. We do reach out and interact, and it really gets worse from there. Good sign we're doing the right thing. 866-34-TRUTH. We go to Damascus, Maryland. I've got some family lives near there. Russell, welcome to the line of fire.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I want to make a comment and then hear your response. Of course, not quite like the statement you just made, but Israel is widely despised across the world, apparently because of what it's done in Palestine to the Palestinians. Many would call it a pogrom, taking their land, water, violated their basic human rights, and also because Israeli propaganda and some lies fueled the U.S.-led invasion of Iraq. And with our shock and awe invasion, we slaughtered thousands, many thousands of Iraqi civilians, including children. But my point is this, that because of what Israel has been doing, its policies of racism and militarism and expansionism, that is violating God's Ten Commandments. We know as Christians that Israel is an heir to the Abrahamic covenant, but if they break the commandments, they not only don't get blessings, God himself will curse them.
Yep.
So, what can be done to reform Israeli policies and to restore Palestinian rights and peace in that area?
What's interesting, isn't one of the Ten Commandments, you shall not bear false witness also?
Yes.
Yeah, because actually you just bore false witness against Israel with extreme overstatements, with many ways. Israel has been seeking to live in peace with the Palestinians since the last century plus. It's clearly documented the biggest issues are the Palestinian leadership refusing to make peace, continuing to launch terror attacks against Israel. For example, Israel gets blamed for having a so-called apartheid wall that's put up. Actually, it's about 97-98% fence, but it was put up to keep murderers out. And since it was put up, where it's wall, it's to keep snipers out. Since it's been put up, the murders have dropped by about 99%. One of my good friends is a Messianic Jewish attorney who works for the good of Palestinians and is coming to the States with Palestinians saying, you've got to work with Israel because the Palestinian leadership is causing us all of our problems. And where Israel does work, say, in a settlement and says, hey, let's work together, the Palestinians have better jobs. The fact of the matter is the Palestinian crisis is explicitly and intentionally the work of Palestinian leaders. Arab resolution in the 1950s, Arab League resolution said that we will not resettle Palestinian refugees. Their suffering is directly due to Arab and Muslim policies. I'll be right back. Give us strength to always do what's right.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to The Line of Fire. We are taking calls on a wide range of subjects, also giving you encouragement from the Word to persevere, to keep going even when the going is tough. Jesus said in John 16:33, in this world you will have tribulation, but be of good cheer, I've overcome the world. 866-34-TRUTH. So just going back to Russell in Damascus, Maryland, when I look at Israel's dealings with the Palestinians, I'm convinced that the old dictum that if the Palestinians were to put down their weapons, there'd be no more war. If the Israelis were to put down their weapons, there'd be no more Israel. Israel's forced to spend a massive amount of its budget on defense. Israel's forced to send all of its young men and women, except for religious exemptions, women for 2 years, men for 3 years into the army before they start college. Nobody likes doing that or looks forward to doing that. As far as America invading Iraq because of misinformation from Israel, I'd say that's a libelous charge. I don't believe you'll document that in any substantial way. So, and what was the sin of the Jews when they were hated? I'll come back to you in 1 second, Russell. But what was the sin of the Jews before World War II? When they were universally hated and scapegoated? What were they doing before there was an alleged oppression of the Palestinians? And in centuries before that, where there have been pogroms, where there have been Islamic anti-Semitism, Christian anti-Semitism, atheistic anti-Semitism, and endless attacks on the Jews, what were their crimes back then? You've got to realize there is an anti-Semitic almost default mentality. Zechariah 12 and 14 tells us that at the end of the age, that all nations will come against Jerusalem and God will fight for Jerusalem, not because of their righteousness, but because of God's promises. So I'm all for calling Israel to account. Friends of mine that are involved in Israel are constantly working for reconciliation between Jew and Arab, working with Palestinian pastors as well as Israeli pastors. I have other friends that work for pro-life in Israel, others that work for justice for the Palestinians in Israel. So I'm all for standing with him. And as I said to the last caller before you called, sir, I certainly agree that Israel has its faults. But when I hear exaggerated presentations, the way you presented them, speaking of pogroms and things like that, that's absolutely atrocious. That's like when they refer to this as genocide. And look, what happened? Last point, then I'll go back to you. There were about 200,000 Arabs who decided to stay in Israel, as the UN voted for the partition plan and for a two-state solution, which the Arabs rejected in 47. That was the second one they had rejected. They had a more generous one in the 30s they rejected. But when the surrounding Arab nations declared war on Israel with Israel's independence, 200,000 Arabs decided to stay rather than flee. About 600,000-700,000 fled. The 200,000 that stayed are now more than 1.5 million. They are prospering within the land of Israel. They are represented on the Supreme Court. They make up about 10% of the Israeli parliament. And they have more rights and liberties than any Arabs living anywhere in the Middle East. And they do not want to be under Palestinian authority or Hamas control. So Israel has shown what they'll do with neighbors who don't want to kill them. They'll be at peace with them, and they'll increase their standard of living. Back to you.
Do you favor one-state solution with an Israel or a nation that has a constitution much like our own Constitution and Bill of Rights?
It's been advocated by Carolyn Glick. My friend Caleb Myers, Messianic Jewish attorney I was referring to earlier, advocates it. I don't know how it's doable. In other words, will those that have been, remember, there's a lot of radical Islam there. Hamas is radical Islam. You almost have to leave Gaza out of the picture entirely. There are many within the Palestinian Authority that are fairly radical. The Grand Mufti of the Palestinian Authority said a couple of years ago, quoted the famous hadith, that the resurrection will not come until the Muslims fight against the Jews and kill them. So with that kind of mentality, how could those be your fellow citizens and neighbors in the same state. I'm not sure it would work.
Is it true that some Arab nations are getting together now to offer another plan, the updated petition plan of the Holy Land, that would be approximately half and half of two comparable states?
I don't know the latest plan that's being offered, sir, but anything that puts Israel with indefensible borders, with people who have sworn to their destruction, that's not viable. But here's the more viable solution. What happened to the 800,000 Jews who were expelled from surrounding Muslim lands when Israel declared its independence? Well, they were by and large incorporated by the fledgling state of Israel that was figuring out how to stay on its own 2 feet while losing about, what was it, about 1% of their population in war and other calamities, or excuse me, about 1 out of every 1,000, which is a massive amount. So why don't the surrounding Arab nations absorb the Palestinians? Why are there Palestinian refugee camps in Lebanon, in Syria, and the West Bank, in Jordan? Why are Palestinians living in all types of horrific situations under Arab leadership? Why not incorporate these people and make them equal citizens?
I think Palestinians would say that their political and religious and legal history gives them approximately the same title to the Holy Land as the Jews have. In other words, they were there before the Jews. I mean, when Abraham...
Well, no, they're there only after. Israel's there first, way before.
No. Abraham was there. When Sarah died, Abraham approached the Arab...
They weren't Arabs, Russell. They were Hittites. They were Hittites. Hittites are more European that were then in terms of a background. Hittites were not even Semites initially, but Hittites are not Arabs. Russell, Hittite.
My copy of Genesis uses the word Arab. Or I forget the fellow's name, but the Arab owner who offered land to Abraham, but Abraham insisted on paying.
Right, there were not Arabs at that time. Arabs come in later, but they are unrelated. Yeah, I'm not sure what translation you're reading from. You're talking about Ephraim the Hittite in Genesis the 24th
yes,
chapter.
Ephraim.
That's actually more propaganda, sir. The ancient Canaanites. No, it's propaganda to say that the Palestinians today go back to people who were in the land with Abraham. That's propaganda. That's Palestinian propaganda. The historic claim to the land is Israel. Look, there was never a Palestinian state. There was never a Palestinian capital. It was considered part of Greater Syria. There is no Palestinian history. The Palestine Post, who published that before 1948? That was Jews. It was a Jewish publication. It's now the Jerusalem Post. The Palestinian Orchestra. Who was that? It was Jews. There's no Palestinian current. Yeah, but here's the bottom line. Here's the bottom line. Just hang on. A very generous offer was made where the Arabs would get most of the land and the Jews a smaller portion in the 1930s. The Muslim leadership said no. Then in 1947, not as good a plan was offered by the UN. Two-state solution. The Muslim leaders said no. The Jewish leaders, quotes from David Ben-Gurion, Golda Meir, said, let us live together in peace. There is room enough in the land for all of us. The Muslim leaders said, we will destroy you and wipe you off the map. And then they lost the war. Tell you what, Russell. Get this book by Ephraim Karsh, K-A-R-S-H, called Palestine Betrayed. You have a lot of info, but sadly, you're I don't know what sources you're getting it from, but they are wrong sources. This is an excellent book that will take you to the documents themselves, Palestine Betrayed, by Ephraim Karsh. Let me repeat, I absolutely call Israel account to its short for its shortcomings. When Israel is guilty of racism against Ethiopians, we talked about it on the air. I've had Ethiopian Christians call with a broken heart to talk about it. Israel as a nation is addressing this. The prime minister is addressing this. Yes, there are aspects of sin and shortcoming within the land. No question about it. I stand against those, but I also stand against false accusations and propaganda. So please look into this. Take the time to do the research. It's a good place to start. Also, just get online and type in Palestinian conflict myths and facts. I think you'll find it eye-opening, sir. Thank you for the call.
Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Yeah, Genesis 23, I said 24. Genesis 23 is when Abraham buys the cave from Ephraim the Hittite. No, the word Arab does not occur there. Perhaps he was thinking of an Arava reference, but I'm looking. I had a moment during the break that we have, the 2 minutes. Just to grab my Hebrew concordance here in software and look up every reference to Arav, Arab, in Scripture. So you've got it, Jeremiah 3, Isaiah 13, Nehemiah 2, 4, and 6, and 2 Chronicles 17, 21, 22, 26. So a total of 10 occurrences in 9 verses, and of course none in the 5 books of Moses or anything before the days of Isaiah. That would be the earliest reference. Just to clarify things, 866-34-TRUTH. We go to Houston, Texas. Barbara, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hi, thank you, Dr. Brown. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure thing.
Shortly after your book, Authentic Fire, came out, you had a gentleman on your program, Sam Storm, because I think you were agreeing with each other about John MacArthur's book. So I know you have cordial relations with him. I saw him on a panel about end time, and there was a premillennialist point of view and an amillennialist and a postmillennialist. And Sam Storm said he could not be a premillennialist because to him, 1 Corinthians chapter 15 teaches that when Jesus returns, there will be no more death, and that the premillennialist point of view, there would be 1,000 years where death would continue after Jesus came back. So I'd like to know what you think about that comment.
Yeah, it's a great comment. Sam Storms is a very solid biblical thinker. First thing, it would appear that there is death in the millennial kingdom. It would appear that way, but it's not guaranteed. In other words, it's possible that no one will die during that 1,000 years, although certain texts, really only one seems to address it in Isaiah 65. But in point of fact, it's not something that's extensively taught in Scripture. For example, Isaiah 11, which gives one of the most beautiful pictures of the millennial kingdom, it doesn't mention death there. So it's possible there won't be death. More specifically, though, 1 Corinthians 15 is speaking for us, the believers, and death will be forever conquered. There will be no more suffering for us as believers. There will be no more death. We'll be raised. So 1 Corinthians 15, verse 50, this is what I'm saying, brothers and sisters, flesh and blood cannot inherit the kingdom of God, nor does the perishable inherit the imperishable. Listen, I'll tell you a mystery. We'll not all sleep, but we'll all be changed in a moment, in the blinking of an eye, at the last trumpet. For the trumpet will sound, and the dead will be raised imperishable, and we will be changed. For this perishable body must put on the imperishable, and this mortal body must put on immortality. Now, when this perishable puts on the imperishable, and this mortal puts on immortality, then the saying that is written will happen, death has been swallowed up in victory. Where, O death, is your victory? Where, O death, is your sting? The sting of death is sin, and the power of sin is the law. Doesn't say There won't be death for anyone else, but there won't be death for us. That's all it's saying. Once we're resurrected, we'll live forever in the presence of the Lord, and we won't die. It doesn't say that there won't be anyone living on the earth that won't die. It's not addressing that at all.
Okay, that makes good sense. There's no more death for the believers, and if there are unbelievers, they might still die.
Yeah, in other words, the picture would be that we're resurrected to be with the Lord, working with him during the millennial kingdom, while God now works out for those who survive the attack on Jerusalem, Zechariah 14, which is pretty explicit when you read it, that there will be people on the earth. And you say, why? Well, God is going to fill the earth in an extraordinary way with the knowledge of the glory of the Lord. His ways will fill the entire earth. He will reign with a rod of iron. And human beings will have an opportunity in a world that is not marked by human evil. In other words, it's not marked by corrupt leadership. It's not marked by all the ugly things we have in this world now. It's not marked by any of that, right? He's going to rule and reign. And yet still, at the end of it, there's going to be a rebellion, a Satan loosed from the bottomless pit, as it's described, and a rebellion where human beings now fight against God. It's almost as if God is saying, look, I'm going to put you in a world that's a perfect world. I'm going to put you in a world with peace, with no horrible suffering, where all of the questions that we have to deal with here in this world are in fact removed. And yet still, human beings will say, we don't want God to be our king. We don't want the Messiah to rule over us. So God will be true to his promises to Israel. God will demonstrate his goodness before the entire world and at the same time expose human sinfulness and remove the last of excuses. Now, others see things differently. I respect that. We don't divide over end time views. I could easily work side by side with Sam Storms in so, so many ways. What unites us is far more than what divides us. We haven't spent a lot of time with each other, but there's mutual respect and appreciation for like heart. That being said, I would be interested to see how this would work out in terms of standing with Israel today and believing for Israel's salvation. In other words, when the rubber meets the road on some specifics, I'd be curious to see, and I haven't talked it through with Sam, maybe one day we'll do it on the air, how that would pan out. That would be the only concern I would have. In other words, we can divide the end, whatever's going to happen is going to happen. You know what I'm saying, Barbara? Whatever God said is going to unfold. If I'm missing it somewhere, or Sam's missing it somewhere, it's going to happen either way. But about the question is, how am I supposed to live today? What should my expectation be? How do I conduct myself? How do I stand with Israel? Those would be the big questions. Hey, thank you for an excellent question. I've got to run. 866-34-TRUTH. If you're on hold, stay right there. I want to get your call the other side of the hour. Remember, if you miss any part of the broadcast, just go to the website, askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org. And a couple hours after the show's over, our team is able to get it right online where you can listen to the entire 2 hours for free. Do you ever find yourself in a spiritual battle? You find yourself really dealing with demonic resistance. What does the Bible say? How much authority do we have? How do we overcome in the midst of spiritual battle? I've done teaching on this. I did it years back at our Monday night classes that we held in Maryland that were the general public would come, and these were really edifying times. I taught 8 weeks, an hour and a half each night, so 12 hours on spiritual warfare, and then 8 weeks, an hour and a half each night, 12 hours on angels, demons, and deliverance. We've got these at a really reduced price. I mean, dare I tell you, 24 hours of teaching for $15 by download or $20 on CD. Go to the website, Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org. You'll find a video. I'll tell you more there. You'll get answers to a lot of questions. Take advantage of it. You'll be blessed. My bottom line today, those who persevere, those who endure, those who overcome, those are the ones we appreciate. Those are the ones who receive the reward. Look, you can't win the race if you don't finish the race. It's time to embrace the mentality of an overcomer.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome, welcome to the broadcast, 866-34-TRUTH. I'm opening the phone lines. We often run out of time on Fridays for You've Got Questions, We've Got Answers. So any question you want to ask on any topic in any area of expertise I have, I will open the phone lines today, 866-34-TRUTH. If you want to challenge me on something or question something we've said, by all means, give us a call. We'd love to have open, honest conversation. I also want to do some teaching from the scriptures to help you overcome, to help you endure. I said in the first hour and at the very beginning of this hour, the little quote before we started, that you can't win the race if you don't finish the race. And you've got to set your sights on the goal or on the finish line. Anyone running a race is not thinking about how they feel at the moment. They're thinking of the destination. And often along the way, there is temptation to quit. Often along the way, there is temptation to cave in. And often we have ready excuses to make. When I would work out with folks in years past and to this day, I've noticed different mentalities that, and look, everybody's at different levels. I can work out, do a really strong physical workout, but then you put me in with someone else and you know, I'm miles behind them, so to say. And you put me with another person, I'm miles ahead. You're never comparing yourself to others. You're competing against yourself. The pressure, the resistance is all relative. What I see is the mentality of those who persevere, even though it's hard, even though it's painful. Even though they think they're at their limit, but they persevere, even if it's slow, even if they finish literally on their knees and on their faces, they still finish. Versus those who say, I can't, and they quit prematurely. It's a different mentality. It's a different attitude. We must, as followers of Jesus the Messiah, embrace the mentality of an overcomer. We must embrace the mentality of an overcomer. Whatever is born of God overcomes the world. And this is the victory by which we overcome the world, even our faith. 1 John 5:4. What does Paul write in Romans, the 8th chapter? He's speaking of the suffering, the hardship, the difficulty that believers endure. And he says this, he asks this question, who will separate us from the love of Christ? Will trouble or distress or persecution or famine or nakedness or danger or sword? As it is written, for your sake we encounter death all day long. We were considered as sheep to be slaughtered. No! In all these things, we have complete victory. We are more than conquerors through him who loved us. The opposition is there. Look at it. Trouble, distress, persecution, famine, nakedness, danger, sword? That's heavy. Yet in all these things, we have complete victory. In all these things, we are more than conquerors, more than victorious through him who loved us. For I'm convinced, Paul wrote, that neither death nor life nor angels nor heavenly rulers nor things that are present nor things to come nor powers nor height nor depth nor anything else in creation will be able to separate us from the love of God in Messiah Jesus, our Lord. So that means there will be opposition, there will be difficulty, especially for the gospel. But God will never let hold of you. By his grace, you don't ever have to let hold of him. We'll take your calls when we come back, 866-34-TRUTH.
Flame, send the fire.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I want to encourage you to tell you, if you're a believer, there's more of God inside of you than you probably realize. No, than any of us realize. There's more grace at work in you and in me than we realize. And in the darkest moments and in the most difficult moments and in the most hopeless situations, God's grace is still there. And out of our weakness, God's strength is made manifest. You're an overcomer in Jesus. The promises in Revelation 2 and 3 are to the overcomers. 866-34-TRUTH. Number to call. I am going to talk about some other news items. I am going to continue to give you some thoughts to encourage you to persevere and endure. But the phone lines are open. Often when we open the phone lines, we get flooded with calls. The later in the show we get, the more people are trying to get through. And that's when we run out of time to get to everyone. So I want to open the phones again on a Tuesday, like we normally do on a Friday, 866-34-TRUTH. We go to Leonardtown, Maryland. Marilyn, thanks for calling The Line of Fire.
Hi, Dr. Brown.
Hello.
I really am glad to hear you as often as I can on WAVA FM. Today, as I listened to you, what you said when you first opened just struck such a chord in my heart about wherefore, seeing we also are compassed about with so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which does so easily beset us, and let us run with patience the race that is set before us. And the rest of it about being...
Yes. Yes.
Conqueror. I am a child of God. I'm not Jewish. I love Jewish people, and I at one time even belonged to a Messianic Jewish group that taught me a lot. But just the last 3 weeks, now at church we are studying a Bible study on Revelation. Maybe that has something to do with it, but just the last 3 weeks, I have been just so overcome by such a depressed feeling and the need. I've called out, Jesus, help me, and I have no single friend who I can just talk with except by phone. And how does... I do endure quite a bit of pain. I am 77, and I have sciatic nerve pain and so forth. Mm. But that wasn't bothering me too much. And so just the last couple weeks, all of a sudden, I feel just overwhelmed to the point of not even feeling like going on, although, no, I would never think of killing myself ever, but it's the way I feel, just heaviness. And how does a child of God overcome this in times like when you're feeling like this? And I realize there's so many other people who are in so much worse situations than I am. Then I feel guilty for feeling the way I feel.
Yeah, I understand. And that doesn't help, does it? Yeah, when you lose that sense of hope, look, the fact of the matter is God puts something in our hearts most every day when we get up in the morning or once our head's clear to start the day, that gives us a certain sense of hope or vision or wanting to be alive. And we almost take it for granted because it's just kind of always there. And then when it's not, when there doesn't seem to be purpose or hope, it's, oh my, the bottom really falls out. And we've all been through it one way or another. Sometimes going through horrific circumstances like a terrible illness or a financial crisis, or a family breakup, or a death in the family, or something like that, and it seems like the bottom falls out, we can't make it. Sometimes life is fine around us, but there's just hellish spiritual attack, and in the midst of it, it often seems like there's no way out. One thing that's helpful, and I'll give you a few, Marilyn. One thing that's helpful is to remind yourself of the many times that God delivered you in the past. In other words, realize, okay, I got through this before. If you ever journal, I've journaled regularly over the years, but you go back and you think, wow, that was dire. Wow, that was heavy. Boy, I felt like it was all over back then, and God took me through. I found an entry that I had written out by hand in a journal entry, and it said, God, if you don't come through now, it's all over. And I looked at it, and I thought, okay, there was obviously a massive financial crisis in our ministry and our lives, and it seemed like if God didn't do something completely out of the ordinary, we were sunk. You know what's wild? Right. It was a few months before that that I'd written that, and I couldn't even remember what it was. So that's one thing. Remind yourself of the faithfulness of God. Ignore the feelings. I know sometimes the pain's acute, but I mean the mental, emotional feelings. Just say, God, I don't feel it. It doesn't seem real, but I know you're faithful. Begin to praise him for who he is, not for how you feel, not for circumstances. Just like Paul and Silas in jail in Philippi, whipped, you know, they're singing praises. Come on, they're severely flogged. They're in a pit of a dungeon. If there's ever a time to be complaining and lose hope, it was then. They're singing praises, and God supernaturally delivers them. So remind yourself of how God's helped you in the past. He's going to help you here. There's going to be a happy ending to this episode too, Marilyn. That's number one. Number two, in the larger issue, remind yourself of the faithfulness of God. And then, to the extent you can, just pray and worship without focusing on an issue. In other words, I was doing a workout yesterday, and everything was kind of pain-related versus energy-related. And I kept trying to think of ways to put my mind on something else, like think of another part of the, you know, lean on my arm and put the pain that, you know. To whatever extent we can do that, it's like, okay, I'm just going to focus on something else, and whatever's going on, I'm going to ignore it. I'm just going to worship, put on worship music. I'm just going to pray in the spirit for a while.
Music helps a lot.
Yeah, and then try to rest. I remember one night I was just discouraged, which is rare for me. I was just beaten down. I had no sense of vision. I had no motivation to do anything. And I thought, you just need to go to sleep early and get a good night's sleep. And I woke up the next morning fresh. But listen, Marilyn, I just want to pray with you. And thanks for listening on WAVA FM. That's one of our greatest stations in the nation, blanketing greater D.C. and into Maryland and Virginia. Lord, we pray for Marilyn. She's your child and she loves you. Lord, I pray for healing of this sciatica. I pray for wisdom for anything she could do to help relieve pain. And I just pray that your grace would flood her heart, that your grace would flood her heart in such a way that the joy is there, that hope is there, and that she's able to minister to others and reach out to them in their needs. Pour out your goodness on her, Father. She's an overcomer. In Jesus' name, amen. God bless you, and thank you for calling. 866-34-TRUTH. I was ready to go to Zion, Illinois. My son-in-law, Ryan, and his family lived near Zion for some time. And there's an interesting history to that city with John Alexander Dowie. But we lost our caller from Zion. 866-34-TRUTH, Charlotte, North Carolina. Keith, welcome to the Line of Fire.
How you doing, Dr. Brown?
Doing well, thanks.
Who was Melchizedek?
Yes, sir. He's mentioned in Genesis, the 14th chapter. Then he's mentioned in Hebrews, the 7th chapter.
He's mentioned in Psalms.
Psalm 110. Psalm 110 is the other reference. Right, so...
And I was just trying to figure out who he was, because his name means King of Righteousness, right? In Hebrew, right?
Yes, sir. Melchizedek. Yep.
Yes. And Salem means King of Peace, which is Jerusalem, correct?
Yeah, that's how it's understood as well. Yes, sir.
Okay, so if he was the King of Righteousness and the King of Peace, and from the scriptures... He had no mother or father. You couldn't be a priest back then if you had a mother or father. So I'm trying to figure out who is this guy and why did Abraham give him a tent.
Exactly. So he's found in Genesis 14, Psalm 110, and then in Hebrews, mainly in the seventh chapter, but the fifth and sixth chapters as well. There are two lines of thought, sir, in terms of who he is. Some understand him to be a pre-incarnate Christ. In other words, Jesus appearing as priest of righteousness, as king of righteousness and king of peace. This was Jesus. Abraham simply recognized him as an exalted figure, a king worthy of honor, and gave him the tenth. And that was Jesus pre-incarnate. The other way to understand it is that he symbolizes Jesus. He was just a priest. In other words, he was a regular human being.
He wasn't just a priest.
Let me explain. Yeah, hang on. Let me explain. When it says without father and mother, it simply means there's no recorded genealogy. It doesn't say who his mother and father are. I'll finish on the other side of the break. Stay right there.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to The Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. I'm talking about encouragement in the Lord. I'm talking about being overcomers and giving you some principles that will help you endure. Also catching up with some news and then taking your calls on any question. So like we do on Friday, you've got questions, we've got answers. Today's a great day to call. We sometimes try to do this an extra day during the week. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. So Keith and Charlotte, when things are being interpreted, Melchizedek is a name, meaning king of righteousness or my king is righteousness. It's not saying that the person themselves is righteous. In other words, it's speaking of God as a righteous king, just like Eliyahu, my God is Yahweh, my God is the Lord. It's not saying that the person is the Lord, it's saying that about God. The same with he was the priest of Shalem, which is taken to be Jerusalem, but Shalem also related to peace. So Hebrews is now looking at who he is. And he was a priestly king, hence Psalm 110 to David / the Messiah, you're a priest forever after the order of Melchizedek. So either he was actually pre-incarnate Christ, or, which I don't believe, or Hebrews 7 is saying, look, there's no recorded genealogy, it doesn't mention mother or father, he's a type and symbol of Jesus.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so but Dr. Brown, how could you be a priest back then if they had no records? It says it in the Bible that you cannot be a priest without the records of your bloodline.
No, because that was before there was no such thing as Israel. There was no such thing as priesthood. He was not an Israelite. He was a Gentile. And the priesthood...
But he was king of righteousness, and even Abraham tenth to him. So some obviously he's important, right?
Yeah, he was a priest of a neighboring city. But there was no official priesthood and genealogy in Israel. The law didn't come until 400 years later. Longer than
so
that, actually.
My thing, though, is his name means King of Righteousness, right?
But that could be referring to God. In other words, that could be referring to Yahweh. When you have a name like that, it's not about yourself. It's about God. God is the King of Righteousness. That was the man's name. His name was about God, not about himself.
So his name basically means what?
That God is the righteous king.
So God is the righteous king, and from there he went down and gave Abraham gave him a tenth because he knew that he was righteous, correct?
No, because he was a king. He was honoring him as a local king. Abraham was not a king. He was honoring him as a king.
Okay, I understand, but it's still not the answer that I'm not trying. That I'm not understanding, though.
Because some believe it was Jesus pre-incarnate.
It's mentioned in Hebrew that he's the high priest in 7:4-10, right?
No, not a high priest. He was just a priest.
It says the highest priest. That's what it says.
Hebrews the seventh chapter. Let me just open it in front of me here. Hebrews chapter 7, see how great this man was to whom Abraham the patriarch gave a tenth of the spoils. Where do you see it says that he was the high priest?
It says it in Genesis. I know that for a fact.
No, he's priest of the Most High God. That's what you're missing.
And that's
He was priest of the Most High God. Okay? So in the ancient world, he was a rare worshiper of the one true God. Maybe Abraham recognized that. Some believe he was Jesus pre-incarnate. I don't personally. Okay? You could read Hebrews 7 to say that. I believe that he was a worshiper of the one true God and that his names symbolize things about the Messiah Jesus. So he is a prototype of Jesus the Messiah. Some believe he was actually the Son of God in human form appearing. That's possible. I just don't see it like that. But anyway, thank you for the questions. Do read the passages carefully, though, again. All right? That's always helpful. Many times, by the way, I've remembered something in Scripture, then go and look at the verse. Okay, it's slightly different than I remembered. So always look at it carefully. But thank you, sir, for the call. 866-34-TRUTH. let me talk about this for a moment when it comes to enduring and persevering. You know the saying, no pain, no gain? I've never run a lot over the years. Lately now, if I'm on the road somewhere, get on a treadmill, I've started to run some and then do other kinds of workout. And, you know, I'll run a mile or something like that or a little bit longer. And I'm just getting used to it because I've never run a lot. But obviously, if you're going to be a serious runner, you're going to have to persevere through pain. I mean, I can't imagine. I did a mile. It was like a 10-minute mile or something like that, or 11-minute mile. And I thought, man, you got guys running a mile in, what is it, you know, 3 minutes and 40-something seconds. You got guys running basically a 4-minute mile for 26 and a half miles for a marathon. I'm thinking, how? Obviously, they're running and running and running, and they run, you know, tens of miles every day or every week, and they've been doing it for years. I understand that, but there's a certain level of perseverance that must come with it, and with that perseverance is a certain level of pain. You know, I've read about marathon runners, and they have to hit a certain second wind, and they, you know, they know, okay, you're going to feel at this point you're going to die, but you won't. Well, why do I say all that? It's not to talk about running. I'm no expert in that whatsoever, obviously. But it is to say that there's certain things that you cannot obtain without a certain level of pain or endurance. I don't mean that God sends cancer on us to show us how much he loves us. No, I don't hold to theology like that, okay? I don't believe that God in his love just says, you know, oh, here's one of my kids. Hey, I think he loves me so much, I love him so much. I'm just going to smite him with cancer just to show how much I love him. No, I don't see that. Now, you can have cancer and be deeply loved by God. You can have cancer and love God deeply. And you can have cancer and grow in grace through it. God forbid that you hear me as saying anything critical or negative in that respect. Of course not. Of course not. So if there's something wrong, well, there's something wrong with you. No. But I'm talking about the pain of endurance. I'm talking about the pain of perseverance. Certain things like character, faith, can only come our way by experience, and it's often by experiencing hardship. It's often by experiencing difficulty. Certain things can only be obtained by way of suffering and perseverance. And that's what will help make you into who you are in God. And that's how you'll learn certain things about God that you wouldn't have ever learned without this. Some of the greatest lessons I've ever learned in my life have been learned about who God is, have been learned in the trenches. Hey, quick reminder, check out this week's resource offer. You can download it and be listening to edifying, eye-opening, scripturally-based teaching on spiritual warfare and angels, demons, and deliverance for way less than a dollar an hour for the teaching. We just want to get it to you. Go to the website, Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org, for more information. There's a video you can watch that'll tell you more as well. We'll be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks so much for joining us on the line of fire, 866-34-TRUTH. You've got questions, we've got answers. It's Tuesday, but I want to get to some extra calls as well. So if you've missed it, there is another video now, release exposing Planned Parenthood further, exposing the trafficking in baby body parts for profit. If you haven't seen it, just go to my Facebook page, Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org, and we posted it, late this morning. Wow, since it was posted on the Center for Medical Progress YouTube page, it was posted, this morning, I think, and it's been viewed over 45,000 times already. So, boy, let the truth come out. Let light expose darkness, and let a love for life and an esteem for life be recaptured. 866-34-TRUTH. This is Michael Brown, your listener-sponsored voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Don in East Bend, North Carolina, welcome to the line of fire.
Yeah, Dr. Brown, I don't really have a question. I just was riding along heading home, and I heard you mention Zion, Illinois, and not often you hear on the radio Zion, Illinois down here.
Yeah, I got a caller from Zion, Illinois. I went to take the call, and they weren't there. So that's why I mentioned it. So what's your connection to Zion?
Well, I grew up there. I lived my first 50 years either there or right in that area.
Really?
And so when you mentioned John Alexander Dowie, I mean, I'm familiar with all of that because my father, his family came from Minneapolis, Minnesota to come to Zion because of John Alexander Dowie and Wilbur Glenn Balaba and that whole Zion situation there. So, I mean, it was a lot like the old Testament days. They had all the street names are biblical names, so you have to know your Bible to get around town. And they had the temple site where all the roads come into that. And so it was an interesting town to grow up in. But I just wonder what your connection was.
Well, here's the connection. Number one, I had read about it when I read about the life and ministry of John Alexander Dowie, the famous book that Gordon Lindsay wrote about him. So here was a man mightily used by God who began to think too highly of himself and ended up believing he was Elijah the prophet went off the deep end. Apparently, as a believer, in other words, never denying the cardinal principles of the faith, but it may have been through overwork and exhaustion and other issues, who knows, whatever flesh there was. I read about it there, and then Gordon Lindsay was miraculously healed while living there, reading books by John Lake, who had a tremendous healing ministry at the end of the 19th, beginning of the 20th century. And then my son-in-law Ryan and his family lived around Zion years back.
I see.
Yeah, so it's just I don't know that I've been there. Of course, been to Chicago many times, maybe close to Zion, but I don't think I've ever been in it. So one last thing. And of course, Dowie wanted to have a place that was just, you know, totally holy, and I'm sure there was good, and then you're going to get legalism there. Was it a different type of place to live? In other words, were the standards of morality higher there when you were growing up?
Well, not necessarily when I was brought up. I mean, a lot of that had changed.
Yep.
It was an extremely legalistic system.
Yeah.
I mean, you weren't allowed to smoke. You couldn't spit on the sidewalk. You know, I mean, they had some big signs up there about all that kind of stuff, but not when I was living.
Right. Yeah, so the thing is, if God births a great holiness movement out of people who love him, then standards will rise. When you try to enforce it without the life and love of the Spirit, you have legalism. Hey, God bless you, man. Thanks for the call.
Flame, send the fire.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to The Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. This is Michael Brown. I am delighted and blessed to be with you. You know, sometimes I just have some fun reading the latest attacks that come against us. You know, I'm looking at let's see, lying and getting rich, an idiot, uneducated racist, hateful idiot, sociopath and jerk, Dr. Hate Brown, persecuting LGBT people for money, a Rothschild puppet, well, more interesting, the monetizing hypocrite, and on and on and on, spreading misinformation and the like. But tell you the truth, for every negative, nasty comment we get like that, and sometimes I just keep them for fun, the words of thanksgiving, of appreciation, are so overwhelmingly louder and more frequent, and they're humbling to receive. They are literally humbling to receive. One woman wrote to us and said, "You're my lifeline." Just listening daily on the radio, she said, "You're my lifeline." You know what that means to us? To know that we're genuinely helping, equipping, and strengthening people in the faith, in the Lord, giving them courage, giving them hope. So thank you for the many kind words. Speaking of news now, am I personally expecting a massive financial collapse in September, based on writings of Jonathan Cahn and Mystery of the Shemitah? I always live as if there could be crisis, and my trust is in God, not the economy. My trust is in God, not the government. My trust is in God, not my bank account, if I have money in the bank. And therefore, whether the economy goes up or down, my trust is in the Lord either way. And my trust is in His goodness and not the stability of the society. Do I expect a lot of upheaval in society in the coming days? Yes, but that's based on what I see already. That's based on the turmoil that our country is in. That's based on the fact that you don't have to be prophetic. You don't have to have supernatural insight. You don't have to have some gift to see that we're in times of real upheaval. My book, Outlasting the Gay Revolution, is written, coming out in September, but is written with the very mindset of helping us overcome and have a long-term victorious attitude in the midst of a lot of societal challenges. That being said, I have no sense about a coming economic crisis, but I am not an economic watchman. I am not an economic watchman. You don't listen to this radio broadcast thinking that I'm Dave Ramsey, you know, for personal financial wisdom, or thinking that I'm some financial guru who's explaining the world markets and what's happening. That's not why you listen to this broadcast, because that's not who I am. Just because I'm not gifted in that way, I don't have background in that way, I'm not called to specialize in that. You can't specialize in everything. You can't specialize in everything. But here's what I believe. I believe hard times are coming, whether it's economic or just in other ways. I believe hard times are coming, and that God's people will rise and shine in the midst of it. That's what I believe. I believe that we're going to have a lot of challenges. Could just be persecution and opposition for the gospel. The economy could thrive. Don't know. In other words, I'm not hoarding food and stepping back from normal life thinking everything's about to collapse. No, I have no sense to do that. Never have in my years in the Lord. And the times passed when we were all urged to hoard food, and it never panned out. Now, it's one thing to do what Dr. Paul Williams says, a dear brother who spent years in medical missions, that we know that calamities happen. We know in the course of a year that say in America there's going to be a hurricane, there's going to be another natural disaster, there could be bad fires, there could be mudslides depending on where you live, there could be earthquakes, different things. So we know that things happen, real bad storm that just knocks out power, and that you should always plan accordingly for that, have a certain amount of water, have a certain amount of non-perishable goods in the house, just basic things. That's a whole different mentality. Yeah, I need to act on that as well, just wisdom, but that's a whole different thing. What I do believe, though, is not that we're about to have an economic crisis where we're all on the street and pooling our resources together in order to get, you know, some cold soup for the day. But what I do expect is increasing opposition to the gospel. And with that, increasing refining of the church and awakening in the church and stirring of God's people. So Luke 18, Jesus gives a parable that we should pray always and not faint, not cave in. In other words, as we pray, as we persevere, there will be temptation to cave in. There will be times when we think it's not going to happen. Listen to these different translations of Luke 18:1, that Jesus spoke the parable to his disciples that people should always pray and not faint, not lose heart, not become discouraged, not give up, not be weary. Those are just different translations of the Greek there. So that's telling me you're going to be tempted to give up. You're going to be tempted to cave in. It's going to look like there is no hope. What's written in Jacob, James, the first chapter? What's written there? Listen to what he says. Count it all joy, my brothers, when you meet trials of various kinds, for you know that the testing of your faith produces steadfastness. And let steadfastness have its full effect, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing. The way that you'll be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing, is by steadfastness. And steadfastness comes as you go through trials of your faith. James 1:12. Blessed, truly happy is the man who remains steadfast under trial. For when he has stood the test, he will receive the crown of life, which God has promised to those who love him. It is those who remain steadfast under trial. Chapter 5 of James, Jacob. Verse 7, be patient, therefore, brothers, until the coming of the Lord. See how the farmer waits for the precious fruit of the earth, being patient about it, until he receives the early and late rains. You also be patient. Establish your hearts, for the coming of the Lord is at hand. Do not grumble against one another, brothers, so that you may not be judged. Behold, the judge is standing at the door. As an example of suffering and patience, brothers, take the prophets who spoke in the name of the Lord. Behold, we consider those blessed who remain steadfast. You have heard of the steadfastness of Job, and you have seen the purpose of the Lord, how the Lord is compassionate and merciful. Hang in there. Help is on the way. I went through something last year where I didn't think I could continue doing something, a particular discipline, a lifestyle change. I felt like I reached my breaking point and I couldn't do it. And I remember telling the Lord, one of these rare times where I just broke and said, I can't. I remember telling the Lord, I can't, I can't. And as I was saying it, literally crying, it's so funny. I mean, it's a funny story. I'll tell it all. I've shared a bit here and there, but I'll tell it all in detail one day. It's funny and embarrassing at the same time. But as I was saying, I can't, at that exact same time, I was watching from the outside. I mean, I was watching myself as I was literally crying in my car, saying, I can't, I can't. I was watching myself, and saying, good, this is just what you need, because your own strength is weak, and out of your weakness, God's strength will be made manifest. No, you. There's only so much you can endure. There's only so much you can take, and then it's too much. You're in over your head. But that's where grace kicks in. That's where God's empowerment kicks in. That's that wonderful word from 2 Corinthians 12, where Paul realizes, when I'm weak, then I'm strong, because God's power is made perfect in my weakness. We'll be right back.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to the Line of Fire broadcast, 866-34-TRUTH. I want to take another moment to encourage you to persevere. And it comes from an interesting place. It's the book of Jeremiah. Now, many of you know I wrote a commentary on Jeremiah, right now in the finishing stages of a commentary on Job. Yes, glutton for punishment. Jeremiah is the longest book in the Old Testament. And I remember, by the way, working on it. I got to a point where I realized there was a deadline. I had to finish it by a certain point. I realized there's no way I can. There's no way I can finish this. I'm not going to get it done on time. And I really came to that point of desperation. And that's when I experienced grace. God's basically saying, I'm going to carry you. Of course, by God's grace, I did get it in on time, but there were delays with others because it's part of a commentary series, and it was from the day I finished it to the day it was published, 5 years. So I got it in plenty of time. But Jeremiah, and then Job is in many, many ways the most difficult book of the Bible. But by God's grace, need his grace to finish too. Got about 5 more weeks of editing to do and get the book to the publisher, but that's going well. Jeremiah never broke publicly. He never broke publicly. However, he did break privately before the Lord. And, you know, God knows our nature, doesn't he? God knows how to talk to us, how to lead us, how to impact us. And he knows what we need. Maybe you've raised several kids and you say to yourself, or you just know over the years, you know, Johnny, when he's going through a tough time, he just needs to be told, suck it up, boy. Come on. You're bigger than that. And he, yeah, I'm bigger. I can do it. I can get through. And then Sarah, she just needs an arm around us. And I know it's hard. I know it's hard. It's going to be okay. And each kid's different. Each kid's different. So God deals with us differently. What's fascinating with Jeremiah is he's persecuted in his own hometown of Anatot. That's the end of the 11th chapter. He's going against the grain. It ends up, he can never marry, never have children. He's going to live a lonely, difficult life, rejected by the other prophets, rejected by the priests, rejected by royalty, rejected even by his own family, and proclaiming disaster, judgment, 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 a horrible, difficult calling. And especially when he then get physical persecution on top of it, as if he was some kind of traitor or family members wanted to kill him, it was just too much. So if you read, let's say, the King James, Jeremiah 12:1, righteous art thou, O Lord, when I plead with thee. Yet let me talk with thee of thy judgments. Wherefore does the way of the wicked prosper? Wherefore are all they happy that deal very treacherously? NIV, you are always righteous, Lord, when I bring a case before you. Yet I would speak with you about your justice. Why does the way of the wicked prosper? Why do all the faithless live at ease? That's not the way I would translate it. The way I would translate it is it's a real challenge to the Lord, even with some sarcasm in the opening lines. basically to say this. I know that you'll always come out right when I lodge a complaint with you. Nonetheless, I'm going to bring charges against you. Specifically, I question the way you run your world. That is what he is actually saying. I know you're going to come out right. Oh, I know you're God. You're right. Yeah. No matter what I choose, you're going to come out right. It's like people with me. Well, Mike Brown, you're just a good debater. I can't out-argue you. It's like, I don't want to argue. I want to look. No. You're going to win. Even if you're wrong, you're going to win. Well, here, Jeremiah's basically saying to the Lord, okay, you're going to win. You're God. But, in point of fact, I don't like the way you run your world. It's not right. Let me read it from the New Jewish Version. It reads there, you will win, O Lord, if I make claim against you. Yet I shall present charges against you. Why does the way of the wicked prosper? Why are the workers of treachery at ease? You have planted them, and they've taken root. They spread, they even bear fruit. You are present in their mouths, but far from their thoughts. Yet you, Lord, have noted and observed me. You have tested my heart and found it with you. Drive them out like sheep to the slaughter. Prepare them for the day of slaying. How long must the land languish and grass of all the countryside dry up? Must beasts and birds perish because of the evil of its inhabitants who say he will not look upon our future? In other words, God, you're not doing anything. You're not judging the wicked. Because you're not judging the wicked, there's a curse on the land. Everybody's suffering. Even the animals are suffering. And people are mocking you and say, you're not doing anything. It's not right. I get persecuted. You don't do anything. The world's messed up. You're not doing anything. How does God respond? Does he say, Jeremiah, I know it looks bad. And I know you're hurting. I know it's a rough time. But you got to trust me, son. Because there are answers. No, you know what his basic answer is? You question the way I run the world because you're having a hard time with your own family? How are you going to make it when the rough times come? That's his answer. Verse 5, if you race with the foot runners and they exhaust you, how then can you compete with horses? If a little persecution is getting you ready to cave in, you're bringing charges against me, what's going to happen? It gets real rough. If you're secure only in a tranquil land, how will you fare in the jungle of the Jordan? You can't take in your hometown of Anatot. How in the world are you going to make it in Jerusalem? For even your kinsmen in your father's house, even they are treacherous toward you. They cry after you as a mob. Do not believe them when they speak cordially to you. I've abandoned my house. I've deserted my possession. I've given over my dearly beloved to the hands of their enemies. Now God is saying, hey, I understand. I've suffered for my own house as well. But a couple times in Jeremiah hands in his resignation basically in the 15th chapter, and God says, if you stop complaining, I can use you. I don't want to be used. Yeah, you'll make it. God strengthens him. And sometimes that's what God says. Boy, I distinctly remember this, as of course Nancy does. She wanted to have both kids at home, so of course we did. We had natural childbirth with a midwife, and in those days it was very rare. It took us a while to find someone to do it. We're talking 38 years ago, 37 years ago. And Nancy is very high tolerance of pain, and labor's going on. I'm thinking she's getting real close to delivering the baby. The midwife shows up, checks her out. She goes, I'll come back when the hard labor starts. I thought, oh, my God. And I'm just watching for the outside. If this is not the hard labor, what's the hard labor going to be like? Of course, like other women and wives, she made it and delivered the babies. I can't imagine the courage of you moms. But in point of fact, that's what God tells Jeremiah. How are you going to make it when it gets hard? And that's telling you there's more of God in you than you realize. You're tougher than you think. You are an overcomer. You can endure. God's with you. He's for you, not against you. With him, in him, there is strength to endure. Therefore, be strong in the Lord and the power of his might. With that, I'm out of time. Check out a special resource offer we have this week. Very inexpensive way to get 24 hours of top flight teaching I've done on spiritual warfare, angels, demons, and deliverance based on the word. Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org. My bottom line today, when you want to quit, look to Jesus. Remember what he did for you without quitting. He lives in you. You can persevere through him.